In theory, it's useful for miners to have more than one project on the go. Resource extraction is a very risky business, and risks can multiply if you're reliant on just one site. Equally, it can divide management time and capital. Bacchanora Minerals, the only pure-play lithium miner listed in London, blindsided investors earlier this year by announcing it had entered into a joint venture with SolarWorld to develop the Zinnwald lithium mine in Saxony. Before then, the company was entirely focused on its major lithium carbonate mine in Sonora, Mexico, which is moving towards a defined feasibility study and project financing. I'm Alex Newman, and for this episode of the IC's Extraction Podcast, I'll be playing an interview I conducted with Bacchanora Chief Executive Peter Secker at Zinnwald on the 2nd of May. Unfortunately, the sound quality isn't perfect, but you should be able to hear Peter's answers. I started by asking Mr. Secker why the company is now looking to expand into Germany and the European lithium market.
We see Sonora being a long life, 200-year resource, focused very much on lithium carbonate and going into the Asian industry. That's a standalone project and will go down. It has its own momentum. What we then looked for is how do you optimize the German automotive industry that's growing really quickly, and give them a source of material from Germany, because the Germans love to have that integrated supply chain where you can buy it in Germany, manufacture it in Germany, and sell it in Germany. There are very few lithium projects in Europe to start with, and the only one that we could find that was actually in Germany was the Zinnwald project. So once you determine that Germany is your market, then zooming in on Zinnwald was relatively easy. And then you have the added bonus of having SolarWorld, which had lithium as a priority 5 years ago, obviously now have moved their priority a little bit because of changes in economic climate, and we're looking to sell and looking to bring in a partner. So everything aligned very well for us.
Geographically, there may be synergies, but Zinnwald is also located in a forest-covered landscape, popular with German tourists. So what chance does the mine have of passing authorities' approval?
For an underground mine, easier than an open pit mine. So obviously we're very focused on the underground mining. We're very focused on a small footprint. We're very focused on only producing a concentrate in this area, and basically taking that concentrate and moving it into a more developed chemical area for the downstream processing. So I think from a permitting point of view, you obviously have to go through all the steps, and it's a two-year process. But I think because it's a historical mining engineer with over 500 years of history, because there's a focus on the lithium industry in the area, then I think we'll move through that in a progressive manner.
You're a relatively small company still.
Yep.
With a relatively small management team.
Yep.
Are you going to be overly stretched, either in capital terms or time terms, over the next 12 to 24 months, given you've now got a German and Mexican focus?
Sure. Well, I think SolarWorld is a key part of that. I mean, SolarWorld has a technical group of a couple of hundred people. It has its own lithium division headed by Armin Müller. So they already have a team in place. In terms of Bacchanora, we have cash in the bank. I mean, day before yesterday, we had $20 million. We've just finalized the placement to Hanwha. That's another, I'm going to mix currencies here, but that's another £12 million that we're just going to... So we have enough money to do what we want to do. Bacchanora management focus will be Mexico. The joint venture focus through Armin Müller will be Germany. So we don't see, apart from my time, a lot of Bacchanora time being spent in Germany.
Okay. One of the long-term goals for Zinnwald, which is looking at higher-end lithium products, how do you get a higher-end lithium product, and what are the end applications? Well,
so if you look at the value stream, the Australian model is to sell concentrates at $900 to $1,000 a tonne. The South American model is to sell lithium carbonate at $10,000 a tonne, lithium hydroxide at $12,000 a tonne. We want to move further upstream. So we want to move into the lithium chlorides, the lithium fluorides, the lithium metals, which sell at a premium and a multiple to lithium hydroxide. So we want to sell lithium chloride at maybe $30,000 a tonne, lithium fluoride at $25,000 a tonne, lithium metal at $100,000 a tonne. So it's the amount of processing you can do to value add. And you can only do it where you have the ability to source the chemicals that you can value add with. So the nice thing about this part of Germany is you have a very developed lithium industry, you have a very developed chemical industry, and all of the inputs that we require are within 30 kilometres of where the mining operation is going to be.
You've got a market in sight, and the lithium market has future applications in sight where there's going to be a greater need for lithium fluoride. I mean, yeah. How much of a moving target is this over the next decade? Because obviously you're very reliant on the gigafactories and the supply chain fitting that model as well, aren't you?
Correct. So all you have to think is, if you increase the number of lithium batteries, then you increase the requirement for electrolytes, and therefore you increase the requirement for lithium fluoride, another value-add commodity. So they all go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So all we're doing is fitting ourselves into that growth in the industry. Whether it's Sigmundbox, whether it's Roskill, whether it's China Metals, they're all saying that the current lithium demand, around 190,000 tonnes a year, growing to 450,000 tonnes a year by 2025. So the lithium demand growth is 100% in 7 years. That's going to happen whether it's lithium carbonate or lithium hydroxide or lithium fluoride or lithium metal. All we're doing is fitting into that supply growth channel.
Right. Where do you sit on the debate about, you know, potential lithium bubble emerging? Some of the industries say that there's lithium, you can find it in
broccoli.
You can find it in lots of places. But, and that the industry can just catch up with the demand that's coming. Do you buy that argument?
I don't know of any industry that is doubling in capacity in 6-7 years. There is nothing. Gold, iron ore, copper, silver, lead, zinc. So the ability for the current producers to meet that demand is almost impossible. You're seeing some expansion out of Chile. You're seeing some new projects out of Argentina. Those are the value-add products. They're producing carbonate and hydroxide. If you look at what's happening in Australia, they're producing low-value concentrates. Those concentrates are going to China, and the Chinese are having to increase the conversion capacity in China. So we don't see it, whether it's Argentina or Chile or China, we don't see that being able to double capacity in such a short period of time.
Okay. Feeding into that story, you've done, as you mentioned, the offtake agreement with Hanwha. Can you just briefly explain the structure of this deal and also what it means? I mean, this is the crucial question, isn't it? What it means for financing full production.
Okay. So Hanwha's a partnership. We've been in discussions with Hanwha for 18 months. They've done a significant amount of due diligence. And what we were looking for was someone who could help us both to sell our product into Asia, but also come in as an equity investor in the company, and also to provide, access to the Japanese debt markets. So Japanese government debt is some of the best debt in the world. So with Hanwha, we have now a 10% shareholder, which obviously gives us some cash, which is nice. But it also means that they're going to take 100% of our stage one production and sell it into the Asian market. So that makes us more bankable from a project financing point of view, because we have the offtaker in place and we have their introductions to the Japanese debt market as well. So Hanwha does three things for us. It's an offtaker, an equity investor, and a debt assister.
If I was a shareholder, could I read then from that debt is going to be the balance of any fundraising?
Correct.
And,
yes.
So, okay, and then the remainder of that, I mean, we've seen the equity placing price was not a significant dilution to the closing price before the deal was announced.
There was no big discount, there was no option added to it.
Is that a guiding price then for the future financing?
So what we are looking for is to complete the bankable study before the end of the year, to have the offtake in place before the end of the year, and to have enough discussions with debt providers before the end of the year. That come the end of this year, we're in ability to go out and raise all the finances we need in a combination of debt and equity.
Sticking with the share price, some people have raised the issue of liquidity, the liquidity of the shares, and obviously there's been some huge news in the last 6 months, but is not necessarily the share price movement to follow that. I mean, is that an issue for you? Are there ways of addressing the liquidity in Bacanora shares?
So at the moment, if you look at our share register, the six top shareholders own about 55% of the company. As we move forward, we've already said that we're going to raise both equity and debt at the next development stage. So there's going to be dilution on the equity side. So you'll see much more liquidity coming into the stock towards the end of this year when we complete our equity raising.
There's a lot of people clearly investing in Bacanora because of one man, that's Colin...
Colin O'Ewing, yes, our previous chairman, yes.
He very sadly died last year. Yep. What has his death meant for the company? Did it sort of change the direction, or was it left some shareholders adrift, do you feel?
So Colin had a very strong vision. Colin loved Mexico, and he loved borates. So a lot of people got into Bacanora in the early days were because of the borates project. Obviously, we've morphed from a borates explorer to a lithium developer. So a lot of the initial shareholders who had that borates vision with Colin are no longer focused on the company, and you've seen an exit of a number of those guys. What you've also seen in that period is some significant new strategic investors, institutional investors. You've seen BlackRock come in, you've seen M&G come in, Igneous Capital are already there and have maintained their position. So you've seen us changing from a junior borate explorer to a more mature lithium developer and a changing shareholder because of that. So I think as we move forward, you'll see more institutions coming onto the board, coming onto the share registry, and less of the small investors who previously were with Bacanora.
Peter Secker, thanks so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I've been Alex Newman, and this has been an Extraction podcast for the Investors Chronicle. To check out more of our podcasts, go to Acast, iTunes, or visit the Investors Chronicle website at investorschronicle.co.uk.